For this episode of Triple Bypass, we are joined on the show by some queer folks who are rallying and responding with community action in this current state of emergency. We'll hear from Rouge Ahmedi and the virtual community outreach work she's doing. We'll also hear from Jack Metcalf and the resource he developed to help people who bind their chest whilst they're sick. And finally, we'll welcome back Catherine Barrett to give us an update on her online community, The Kindness Pandemic. All this and more coming up on the show that puts the B in LGBTIQA+, Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. And now, here's some pandemic-themed yet excellent songs. This is Don't Break Me by bisexual babe Montaigne.
I don't feel the same buzz when your name comes up on my phone anymore. Feels like I don't feel you, I fear you, and it makes me cry on my floor. It feels like you're taking me for granted. I've given you everything I have, yeah. And I can barely bring to mind the reason why I've stretched myself so far for you. But two people trying to keep the fire burning. You've been busy playing around and starting fights while I've been busy earning. Every time that I try to explain it, you think that your pain is more important. And the hardest thing is that I don't want to give you up. I love you, I love you.
Your weekly bisexual plus radio takeover. I'm Amelia, and I'm here this week to bring you your weekly fix of bi plus community goodness. Flying solo this week as we are still all in isolation and currently recording from home, but with great enthusiasm, no doubt. If you're lucky, my dog Patch might make a cameo as he chases his ball around my ankles. Hopefully he doesn't make a big racket barking. For anyone listening in, you can keep up to date with us on Triple Bypass at our socials, Facebook Triple Bypass, Instagram Triple Bypass Joy, or you can email us anytime at triplebypass@joy.org.au. This evening, we're going to be bringing you a special episode on the queer community responses that we've seen in the past 2 weeks in response to the global pandemic we found ourselves in. The resilience and responsiveness to this pandemic from queer people in particular has blown me away. Many of us have been here before, responding to the HIV/AIDS crisis, and I, for one, am incredibly grateful to our elders for leading the way and setting an example of how we look after each other when things get scary. Having spoken to our guests, who are also ensuring the needs of trans and non-binary people, and queer people and trans people of colour are also considered in this health crisis, I'm so heartened to know that community is looking out for each other
And there are ways that folks can access help that they may need until more formal systems hopefully are in place. So the first guest we'll hear from this evening is Rouge Ahmedi. Rouge and I chatted just over a week ago, so have a listen to some of the incredible things she has to say, but keep in mind that some of this info may have changed given the fast-changing spaces we're in at the moment. So without further fuss, let's meet our guests. Our first guest this evening is Rouge Ahmedi. She uses she, her pronouns, is an economic and racial justice campaigner, currently head of engagement at Justice Connect, is a chairperson of the Human Rights Arts and Film Festival, and has also been spending the last week or so developing rules and guidelines for a community Facebook group, Northside Melbourne Coronavirus Outreach. She works there with a dedicated admin team moderating and facilitating this space. Welcome, Rouge.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I hear you're a very busy person, so thank you so much for taking the time.
That's all right. Thanks for having me.
So we'd love to hear from you, the community group that you've helped to set up on Facebook that's called Northside Melbourne Coronavirus Outreach. Can you tell us about where that came from and what purpose it serves?
Mm-hmm. So there's heaps and heaps of Facebook groups that have popped up to show our neighbours and our community kindness while we're watching, you know, people tackling each other over toilet paper and kind of being in full crisis mode.
Oh, it's very scary.
Our group is, you know, provides a platform for how-to instructions to coordinate mutual aid. And we don't want to just get people to be talking to each other on online spaces because people who have access to phones, computers, and the internet are relatively privileged.
Totally.
We want people to, like, share skills and knowledge about how to reach out to their neighbors, especially people who are sleeping rough,
mm-hmm.
and build networks and help people get in contact with each other,
yeah,
and then
cool.
share resources around, which is kind of like a antithesis to everyone's kind of panic hoarding at the moment. Our main focus is to get young people who are relatively healthy or are less at risk to reach out to elders in isolation. There's a lot of people who are experiencing disabilities or chronic illness.
Totally.
Or who are immunocompromised. And there's lots of people who are unemployed slipping through the cracks because of, you know, the gaps in our social welfare system. So
yeah.
That's who we're focused on.
Cool. And so folks who are just within northern Melbourne suburbs are encouraged to join specifically if they're able-bodied and have income such that they can help others?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have heaps of people asking for help as well. We
cool.
try and create a space as safe as possible for that.
Awesome.
But we really want people to go offline and not just stay online.
Great. And so not necessarily rely on the being coordinated as kind of sent out into the world. It's more like these are some ideas that you can take away and implement in your own communities. Is that right?
Yeah. And also, like, we want to really support hyper-local initiatives, so people actually getting to know their neighbours.
Oh, cool.
And being in close physical spaces, you know, and in touch with each other.
Yeah.
So we coordinate initiatives, and the founding administrators of the group are all experienced organisers and campaigners. And so we're coordinating initiatives on our own, but our main focus is to contact minoritised communities, get these local neighbourhood groups, and then kind of build a bridge between all the different types of communities.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing work and largely thankless work. So thank you so much for doing that.
It's all right. It's largely just kind of building the technical tools and
cool.
calling people and being on heaps of Zoom calls to make sure that we're really connected with grassroots community groups in particular.
Fantastic. Relating to the group, you mentioned that it's open for all folks within the north side of Melbourne, the northern suburbs. Considering queer communities specifically, what do you think is important to consider for queers in this changing health landscape, specifically for these kinds of grassroots campaigns and encouraging folks to make those connections? Are there things that people should be aware of?
I think we, with every tool that we're building, we're trying to make sure that people are taking all the necessary health and hygiene precautions and really being aware of their impact
mm-hmm.
on other people's well-being.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening with the queer community and community face, especially if you're trans, disabled, if you've got a chronic illness, all the issues that you face already prior to COVID-19 are exacerbated in these current circumstances, because all frontline services are completely stressed and also trying to adjust to this crisis mode. And so they're in crisis management phase.
Totally.
And so there's kind of like not much opportunity to be, you know, creative or sky high or really hopeful and stuff. Everyone's kind of just being really instantly responsive.
Yeah.
And so there's risk of people providing services being burnt out, but also people slipping through the cracks. And so, you know, access to healthcare, employment issues, a wide range of, like issues to do with housing discrimination and even incarceration and racism is something that's going to be really entrenched. And so if we're not careful and really aware of these things, we can kind of be pushed back quite a lot in terms of our endeavors for justice for our community. And one thing I always think about is the religious discrimination bill, that's kind of building a wedge between religious people, people of color and migrants, and then queer and trans people. This is kind of a perfect bill to kind of separate all these communities that you actually should be standing in solidarity, especially for people who are in the intersections of all those lived experiences. And so it's things like that, like tools like that, that are about harming people and imprisoning people or punishing people. The state is going to kind of be feverishly searching for those kind of, what they would deem as solutions or responses to this crisis. And so we actually have to kind of create spaces where we can have respite, we can build community, we can find joy, because that will give us a bit more energy and a bit more kind of foresight to push back against, you know, these kind of pressures on our communities.
Fantastic. Well, after the break, we'll hear a bit more from Rouge and how we can use our voices to advocate for others and make some pretty frank demands, in my personal opinion. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, and we'll be back just after this.
So untouched that I
That was Untouched by the Veronicas, which all of a sudden has become a very relevant song in our lives. And you're back on Triple Bypass, the show that puts the B in LGBTIQA+. We throw in a P for pansexual, a Q for queer and questioning, and an E for everybody else. We are not gatekeeping queers. We are not about that life. I'm Amelia, and we've been hearing from Ruj Ahmedi about the Northside Melbourne Coronavirus Outreach Facebook community and some of the wonderful work that has come out of that group.
So, Ruj, I'd love to hear what the group has achieved in the past week. It sounds like you folks have been so incredibly busy doing such great work. What's been going on in the group and what have you achieved?
Well, firstly, our intention was to get connected to as many different types of communities. We've been getting in touch with refugee communities, First Nations communities, outside of the members of the group, of course, and people who are immunocompromised, and just making sure that we're embedded and partnering with a broad range of people.
Right.
But then, like, there's great stories that have come out as well. Like, we've been able to get 3 days' worth of supplies to a person sleeping rough in their car, provide $60 worth of shopping for a single mom, deliver a bunch of Tupperware to houses. People have dropped off food. Others have taken people who are in quarantine at the moment and taken their dogs out for a walk morning and night. And we've also been able to create amazing resources. And that's all a clear antidote. People are hungry for an alternative to that kind of, like, panicked, individualized, hoarding and buying.
Totally.
It's relatively substantiated in the current circumstances.
Oh, of course. Like, we haven't had much clear communication from the federal government and the state government, if I'm being honest, on what we can expect from going out and buying groceries, what we can expect from social isolation, and if our actual, if we're going to be told to be staying at home, what does that mean? Does that mean we can go out and get more supplies? Like, it sounds amazing that you're creating resources to fill the gap that a lot of people have in their understanding of what's to come.
And I think, like, crisis management is a very specific, like, it's skill set.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very difficult to get a broad range of agencies, frontline services to be working in collaboration. There's a lot of conflicting priorities, right? Mm. So I appreciate it's a very difficult thing to do.
Mm.
But I think it's really important for a government, especially, like, on a national basis, to be interested in governance and to be able to reassure people about the panic that they're feeling, because they're seeing the news, and obviously the 24 news cycle can be unrelenting. And so if you're sending people inconsistent messages or not enough clear and concise and calm messages, people are in their right to feel a bit overwhelmed and confused and start to act in that kind of really individualized way.
Of course.
And I think that, like, the response also has been to call for penalties. So instead of calling for expanding healthcare, we're seeing the kind of gaps that we've seen in the social safety net. We've seen the social safety net kind of being eroded over the last 15 to 20 years. And so a crisis like this really, really magnifies those gaps. And so suddenly all of the people, especially in regional areas that are experiencing, you know, young people that are experiencing up to 25% unemployment, are now facing even worse circumstances. People are already having a really tough time experiencing such intense poverty. And so this crisis is really going to make it really tough for those people, especially if they've got a disability or they have chronic illness. And so I really worry when government wants to, for example, provide, like, jail time or a fine for breaching, self-isolation requirements.
Mm.
When people are in precarious, like, job situations,
totally,
they may be worried about accessing healthcare. You know, you're actually not offering solutions to people. You're making them more scared and more likely to breach those kind of recommendations because they don't have any other solution.
Of course. If all they're being told is you have to self-isolate, but they're not being provided with support to do that in a safe way, it's unreasonable to expect that people will do so.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're sleeping rough. Like,
of course.
How are you going to self-isolate? A lot of frontline services are really worried about not being able to even give crisis accommodation to these people. And so, that's really going to be a really tough time for people who are already doing it tough.
100%. And we're so thankful that you folks are filling a lot of the gaps that are in state and federal governments' blind spots at the moment, by the sounds of things. I'm wondering what your thoughts might be around how we can use our voices to advocate for some of those folks who are doing it a lot tougher in the current situation.
I think it's really important to remember that we need to have class and racial solidarity. And so that means that we are more like, if you're a waged worker and you're privileged to have a roof over your head, or you're renting, etc., and you can provide for your rent, you're more likely to lose your job and become, you know, and experience homelessness. And so, you know, your connection to people who are doing it tough, like, you have a very strong connection to these people. That yeah. there is a sense of, like, solidarity that we need to have across all different types of experiences. And so what we need to talk about is a strong social safety net. We really need to stop talking and thinking in silos. I'm seeing so many great initiatives across different industries, especially for the arts and music sector. But we really need to start to think about what are the kind of the deeper systemic things that are happening, and not just think about it, but start to reach out.
Totally.
So in the last week, I've just been spending a lot of time talking to people across different types of areas of campaigning and advocacy work and frontline services, and just checking in on where they're at and really trying to prepare ourselves to really advocate for all of us, because any of us could fall behind in rent, any of us could lose our job. It's going to be a tough couple of months and possibly a couple of years, and so we need to all get through it the best way we can.
100%. And if we're starting on the right foot and having these kind of conversations and thoughts now, it puts more people in a better position for the long term, because this is a marathon, not a sprint. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, like, seeking justice is a lifelong purpose. It's not just like an immediate momentary experience.
100%.
It's something that we all need to be around for, and so we're all valuable and we need to look after each other.
Oh, I love that. Couldn't have said it better myself, and wouldn't even try. Do you have any other resources that you'd recommend outside of localized Facebook groups, or do you have any other thoughts of groups that you've seen pop up, because there's so many, or do you have any other thoughts on things that people can access during this time just to try and keep their head above water?
I think this is a wonderful moment to start reading up on transformative justice and prison abolition, because it starts to think about how we can hold each other accountable and look after each other in ways that are focused on our humanity and our collective humanity, and not just punishment and rejection. And so if you've got some time and you're self-isolating, I would really advise lots of people to kind of pick up a book and have a read of resources about that.
Great.
And also just remember that, you know, we should be working across so many different types of areas, and to always challenge ourselves to think beyond our, you know, little bubble.
Yeah, what we know and what's comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. We have had the absolute pleasure of being joined by Rouge Ahmedi this evening and chatting about the Northside Melbourne Coronavirus Outreach Group that she and an amazing group of dedicated admin team are working hard to facilitate and develop resources and connections, and reminding us what's important during this time. Thank you so much, Rouge, for taking the time to chat with us this evening.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for listening, everyone.
I ain't worried about nothing, I ain't wearing a nada. I'm sitting pretty impatient, but I know you gotta put in them hours, I'ma make it harder. I'm sending pick up to picture, I'ma get you fired. I know you're always on that night shift, but I can't stand these nights alone. And I don't need, work, 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 work.
work, but you gotta put in work, 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 work. You don't gotta go to work, 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 work. And my body do the work, 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 work. We can work tomorrow, oh, oh, oh. We can work tomorrow, oh, oh, oh. Let's put it in a motion. I'ma give you a promotion. I'll make it feel like a vacay. Turn the bed into an ocean. We don't need nobody. I just need your body. Nothing but sheets in between us. Ain't no getting off early. I know you're
for me. Take it to the ground, pick it up for me. Look back at it all, I'm for me. Put in work like my time she ride it like a 63. I'ma buy a new Celine, let her ride in the forest with me. Ooh, she the bae, I'm her boo, and she down to break the rules. Ride it down, she gon' go, I'm gon' choose. She finesse, I pipe up, she take that. Putting overtime on your body.
You ain't gotta go away. Work, 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 work. But you gotta go away.
Was Work From Home by Fifth Harmony. I'm Amelia and you're back on Triple Bypass, where the Bi Plus babes take over the airwaves. We are back after hearing from Rouge Ahmedi and the Northside Melbourne Coronavirus Outreach Facebook group and some of their incredible work. Speaking of work from home, my partner Jack and I have been working from home for the past 2 weeks, as we came into contact pretty early on in the piece with someone who was suspected of having coronavirus. So on our first cabin fever weekend at home, over breakfast, we were chatting about what we could do to help from our kitchen table and what resources people might need that we could potentially help with. Now, lucky for me, Jack studied sports science and is a former personal trainer. He's also a trans guy and has worked in transgender health policy and program development. So he knows what resources are usually community driven and created. So I sat eating my breakfast and Jack was pottering in the kitchen, and he was chatting to me saying that he wondered if people knew what was recommended around chest binding for trans and gender diverse people when they're sick. So whilst he was chatting, I pulled my laptop open and just started typing down what he was saying, mainly so I could keep up and remember it myself. I'd never heard any of this before. I'm a cisgender queer woman, but I work in trans health spaces with my colleagues, and I wondered if we could make something quickly to release into the world to hopefully help a few folks. So that afternoon, we made a series of 10 social media tiles that we released on Facebook, and we went a little bit viral, hey Jack?
Yeah, we did.
Which was a fun and new experience for us. Mm. But Jack, hello, by the way.
Hi.
Would you be able to give our listeners a bit of your background and history as to where this came from in your brain?
Yeah, sure. So obviously, for me as a trans guy, I bound my chest for about 7 years before I had my top surgery and wore binders and such, but I also did a lot of drag, so I've tried all of the ill-advised ways of binding your chest, from ace bandages through to using strapping tape to pull things to the side into the armpits so you could wear an open shirt, and so intimately know how bad those things can be for you and how painful. But I also was binding at the point in time when I was still doing my sports science degree. So, I actually, you know, in learning how to do all of the lung capacity testing and such at uni, managed to have the opportunity to do a lot of those testings on myself while I was wearing a binder and while I wasn't wearing a binder. So I can, at least in my personal account, attest to the fact that binding does have a significant impact on your lung capacity and its abilities. So I also, during that period, did have the misfortune of getting quite sick in a manner that was misdiagnosed. So I had walking pneumonia for 8 to 9 weeks and didn't know about it.
Whilst you were binding?
Whilst I was binding, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, and that meant that I was coughing badly enough that I managed to crack a rib. Binding while sick is something that I am personally quite passionate about people understanding a little bit more about. Definitely. So if they can avoid that, then I would be very grateful for all involved.
So knowing what you do know and have experienced from your own illness and also the work that you've done within sports science, can you give our listeners a bit of an understanding of what the resource we developed was? So what were some of the recommendations?
Yeah, so I started thinking about it a lot more once I'd been reading in the news accounts that one of the complicating factors of people who were contracting COVID-19 is pneumonia, which is a fluid buildup in the lungs. So A, as somebody that's had it myself, and B, knowing that that's something that's really difficult when you aren't able to use your full lung capacity and cough and be able to expel all of that delicious gunk in your lungs, I realised that that might be a risk that was quite unique to trans and gender diverse populations. And as those of us from the community know, and those working in the resource space for our communities know, there's not often a lot of immediate research or resources being created that are specific for our communities. We're the ones that have to create them for ourselves. So we just started talking about it and you were doing the lovely typing and we brought this thing together. But basically it was sort of trying to touch on all the points around the importance of trying to spend some time not wearing a binder if it's possible.
Right.
So the best medical advice you can get around being sick and wearing a binder is to not bind. However, that's not really a reality or an option for a lot of people who bind because of dysphoria or the places that they work or family or just general safety in the world. Binding isn't often an option. It's a necessity for safety.
And for some folks who are in isolation at the moment, potentially in share houses, outside of, you know, who knows if that's going to be a place where they would feel safe to be able to not bind.
So I wanted to pull this together just because it's important for people to know the risks, but also what they can do. So if you're not in a position where you can be going without a binder entirely while you're feeling sick, that it's important to find a private place throughout the day wherever possible. I used to, you know, duck into toilet stalls and lift my binder up over my chest so I could spend a little bit of time deep breathing to make sure that I was using that full lung capacity, and to intentionally spend some time in those periods doing deep breathing activities, making sure you go the full lung capacity and out.
So breathing all the way in?
All the way in to the full depth capacity of your lungs until you can't pull anymore, and then slowly letting it out.
Okay.
So something that can happen when you bind is that without realising, particularly if you bind for a long period of time, is that you can accidentally train your body to only shallow breathe, essentially, because the majority of your day you're only shallow breathing and then you are relatively shallow breathing while you sleep. So you, if you're not doing exercise or you're not intentionally spending that time deep breathing, you can actually only be using that limited capacity of your lungs even when you're not.
You get out of practice.
So it's important to spend some time practicing that deep breathing and making sure that you're getting really good oxygen supply and such. But it's also really good advice that when you do get to a point where you take off your binder, that you actually intentionally cough.
Why is that important?
That's important because it forces your body to loosen itself up. So it stretches out all the muscles in between your ribs. It forces you to take those nice deep breaths and to give you an opportunity to expel some of that gunk that might be in your lungs so that it doesn't start to build up and lead to complications. It also just can provide a little bit of relief once you've gotten out of a binder, reminding that you do have that full capacity to breathe with. So it's just a really good recommendation in general, whether you're sick or not. It's also really important to stretch. So if you're wearing a binder a lot, it's compressing a lot of your muscles and it's holding you in certain positions in your body over a long period of time. So a lot of trans folks can often get sort of sore backs and neck problems because of it. So it's particularly important, especially if you're going to be getting sick, to when you're out of your binder to spend, or even when you're in it, to spend some time stretching and loosening up those muscles.
So stretching all over your body or just your chest and neck?
It's generally good all over body, just for general health, but particularly related to wearing a binder, focusing on stretching out the front of your chest, your pec muscles, because a lot of trans folks will hunch over so that there's not it's not showing through in the t-shirt.
Right.
And that can round out your spine and throw your head forward and give you some sort of like upper mid back and neck problems. So it's important to stretch out your upper chest, your spine, your neck. So the resource we put together has got some basic images, and because I'm a sports science and I couldn't help myself, the image descriptors have quite detailed guidance about how to do those stretches to get some relief.
You're such a nerd, I love it.
Yeah, I can't help it. we also touched on in the resource the importance of holding a neutral spine while you're coughing. So, for instance, when people cough, often there's the impulse to sort of twist away or turn, particularly if you're around other people.
Yeah.
But just because if you're coughing for a really long time, your muscles can get fatigued and your spine is generally pretty strong, but there's also a lot of really small little muscles connecting in between each of the vertebrae. And if you are twisting and bending off to the side or turning while you're coughing and they're fatigued, you can actually be at higher risk for some additional injury. So it's important, if you are going to cough, do turn away from people, obviously, and cover up into cough into the bend of your elbow to cover it up. But try and see if you can't keep your spine sort of straight up and down in a neutral position so that you're not hunching and putting yourself at risk for an injury.
Good to know.
And we also touch on the fact that it's really important, particularly if you think you might be symptomatic with COVID-19, that you really do need to seek professional medical advice. So for a lot of trans folks, that can be really intimidating because the medical systems often don't serve us, and we often experience sort of additional barriers and harassment when we go there.
Totally.
But it is really, really, really important for your health and well-being in this particular period that you seek that help. If you're worried about what's going to happen, you can always call ahead. It's in fact advised that you call ahead to sort of let them know that you're coming. You could potentially see whether or not it's possible to visit a trusted GP if they've got the capacity to do that.
Cool.
But also do sort of reach out to any sort of friends or people that might be able to go with you whilst social distancing, obviously, to sort of be a support person in that environment, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, they're super amazing points. I love that. Thank you for sharing. Were you surprised how widely the resource was shared? Because I think the last time I checked the page, it was something like 40,000, 50,000, 60,000 engagements on Facebook.
Look, I knew that it was going to be something that would be important for people to know, but I was surprised at how far it went, you know. And particularly because initially we shared it through my personal page and suddenly I was getting, messages from, queer groups in Vietnam asking if they could translate the resource.
So
I got
good.
Contacted by somebody in Spain. We got contacted for permission from a First Nations queer group in the US as to whether or not they could share the resource through their pages. So it went everywhere, which I was really, really pleased to see.
I saw Uppercase Chase, who's a YouTube blogger, featured it in one of the videos that he makes in his YouTube channel, which was pretty cool.
So I was really pleased with how far it went. But given that we'd shared it on my personal page, eventually as it got more popular, also the trolls found us.
Yeah.
So we opted to create a standalone Facebook page instead called Queer Health Collaborations. And you can find that on Instagram and Facebook by using at Queer Health Collabs, just so that we could host it somewhere central that wasn't my own page, so I didn't have to filter through all the comments and trolls.
Perfect.
But that's been going off really well, so that's exciting.
So if folks want to check that resource out, they can head to Queer Health Collabs on Facebook and Instagram. Also, if you feel like you may want a copy of it for dissemination in any of your health services or within any groups that you're involved with, and you want the original images or PDF, just feel free to contact either of us through that page and we can send it out to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jack, for coming on and chatting to me. I know you don't have much of a choice because you were in the living room and I came up and asked you about it.
We're in isolation together, babe.
So thank you for coming on the show, but also thank you for being the long-suffering partner on a radio presenter during a pandemic.
Thanks for having me on. Oh,
I'm Amelia. I'll be right back with you in a sec. Now I'm playing this one for Jack, as I'm sure he is sick to the back teeth of me in isolation. This is Leave Me Alone, I'm Lonely by Pink. Here on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9.
So much more when you're not here watching.
That was Leave Me Alone, I'm Lonely by Pink, my tongue-in-cheek addition to this pandemic community response episode of Triple Bypass, the home of Joy's bisexual agenda. We are thrilled to still be able to broadcast to you from home. I'm Amelia, and I've been chatting with Jack about things to consider when you're sick if you bind your chest. Some other amazing health and wellness resources have been released by Switchboard Victoria, Thorn Harbour Health, and ACON, and I'd encourage you to keep across all of their social media accounts in the coming weeks as we navigate this pandemic together. Final guest for this episode is Dr. Catherine Barrett, who we are welcoming back to hear about her revolutionary online community, The Kindness Pandemic. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thanks, Amelia, and thank you to Joy for keeping the station going and keeping us all connected.
Oh, total legends. A special shout out to Rachel, our program director, who is doing an amazing job. So we heard from you, Catherine, 2 weeks ago about the Kindness Pandemic, which seems like months ago, to be honest, which then was only 4 days old. So for our listeners who may have missed that episode, could you catch us up on what the Kindness Pandemic is?
Yeah, so the Kindness Pandemic is a project based around a Facebook group that I set up 2 weeks ago, and we invited people to post into the group acts of kindness to improve the lives of people affected by coronavirus. And in the last 2 weeks, it's grown to 500,000, actually almost 600,000 people.
Oh, my gosh.
It's huge.
How? Clearly it's something that people need.
It is. I think the interest is, I think with coronavirus, a lot of people are anxious. And then there were all the bad toilet paper stories and people behaving selfishly.
Totally.
And I think what the group has done is people want to believe in humanity. They want to know that it's going to be all right. And when people come to the group to share their acts, you know, like I just looked at a post a moment ago and it's had 20,000 likes. Like,
oh, wow.
People want to feel uplifted. They want to feel connected to each other.
Totally.
They want to know that it's going to be all right.
That's gorgeous. So in just those 2 weeks, the community has grown astronomically in numbers, if not anything else. But what else has changed within the Facebook group in that 2 week period? What does it look like now?
It looks like, well, lots more volunteers, which is absolutely wonderful. And can I do a big shout out to Amelia, who is one of the volunteers. I'm really grateful for your support.
Oh, there are so many amazing folks working on it, giving of their time.
Yeah, absolutely, which is incredible. The way it's changed is that we have now moved to theme post. So at the moment we have an intergenerational love stories theme.
Oh, gorgeous.
And we're inviting children to write a story to an older person, a story about an older person they love, and share it with the older person. The older person responds. And the first one went up this morning, and it's so gorgeous. This beautiful little munchkin, he must be about 4 years old, who wrote a letter to a nana that said, "I love you, Nanny, you are so pretty."
Oh.
It's so beautiful. This is really beautiful stuff.
I haven't seen that yet. I'll have to jump on.
So these are our theme posts, and the reason for doing that is we want to now get people, we want to inspire people to new ideas of kindness. And one of the other things that's changed as well too is we've moved to local groups. We got to 500,000 and then we said, all right, we know this works, but we're processing about, you know, 12,000 posts a day.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is bring people back to saying, we know this works. What about embedding this in local communities so that country towns or suburbs or cities can set up their own local group, and it can be focused on acts of kindness. But what it can also add into is information about local businesses, who's open, who's shut, and local health services, which health services are operating, you know, advice and support from local health services. And by doing that, we're really embedding it into local communities, so it's supporting local people. It could be, you know, someone says, there's an elderly woman that lives in, you know, XX Street and she needs a hand, who can do it? And that's that really works in a local group. It doesn't work in a group of our size. So
totally.
I'm not sure how many groups have set up yet, but I'm tipping it's over 30 have set up in just a couple of days.
Oh, my gosh.
All around the world. And this is the way to create change. If local people can support local people by setting up a kindness pandemic for their local community, then it really adds value and creates change. So on the campaign website, which is thekindnesspandemic.org, there's a page called Local. And on that local page, there's instructions for how to set up your own group. There's some guides. And what we're asking people to do is email our local team. We've got a whole team working on this.
Mm-hmm.
And let them know what you're doing. And then at the end of the process of setting it up, email the local team a link to your page so we can put it in a register or a network of all the groups so people can get on this network and have a look at where their closest local group is.
Fantastic. So, for example, someone, let's say in Dalesford, could jump on the Facebook page for the Kindness Pandemic, which is at the Kindness Pandemic, and click on the groups tab, which hopefully we'll have a list of all of the different groups that have been formed by local communities and see if there's one for them. And if not, potentially set one up themselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. You got it in one.
Oh, that's great.
And what we're saying to people is we're encouraging people, don't go out and set up a group on your own.
Yeah, cool.
Because that's not going to work for local communities. You need to form partnerships with people in your local area, you know. Talk to local businesses, talk to local health services and ask them if they'll support what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then your group is really adding value to your local community.
Totally. That's awesome. And I guess it also shares the work around because managing a group that just grows and grows and grows is a huge task.
It's enormous. It's enormous. Yeah. And I think there's a sense of solidarity in doing that. You know, with the group, the admin team for the Kindness Pandemic, you know, there's a beautiful sense of solidarity between us all. And I think, you know, when I think about it for myself, being part of that group and part of that campaign and the project feels like I feel like this is really good. It's really improved my mental health.
Totally.
You know, it's a lovely thing, lovely, really positive, action-focused thing that people can do in such a difficult time.
Totally. Just focusing on the things that we can do for each other and with each other to come together in a time that feels really scary.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so we've shifted right away from, you know, memes about kindness and pictures of cute puppies and said this is about action.
Totally.
It's about action for change. And a lot of people have said, you know, I'm really feeling a sense of shared humanity, you know, with this.
Oh, gorgeous. Fantastic. Well, if you are wanting to get involved, you can look up on Facebook The Kindness Pandemic, either the Kindness Pandemic group, the local groups, or the Facebook page to keep up to date. And you can also check out thekindnesspandemic.org. Thank you so much, Dr. Catherine Barrett, for coming on and chatting with us.
Thanks for the invitation, Amelia.
No worries. I'm Amelia. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. We've almost wrapped up another episode of Triple Bypass, but we'll be back again next Tuesday to bring you more of the Bypass agenda. If you know a friend who'd enjoy listening to us, let them know. They've likely got some time to listen to some podcasts at the moment, and it's really cute. That's what community is all about, sharing things that you enjoy. So you can catch up on every episode of Triple Bypass as a podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and where all good podcasts are found. You can also subscribe so you never miss any of this juicy Bypass content. We exist for you, dear listeners, so send us some love if you love what we do. You can also find us on our socials, Instagram, Triple Bypass Joy, Facebook, Triple Bypass, or you can also send me or Ruby an email anytime at triplebypass@joy.org.au. We love hearing from you. I'm Amelia. I have been sad to not be joined by Ruby this week, but we will be coming back together in the next couple of weeks. This has been another Bypass Takeover from the team at Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. Stay tuned. Coming up next is a little pod of joy. Bye.